Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's T Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's T Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-T today or visit mensteclinic.com. That's mensteclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Cross teams.
I don't know if this guy played lacrosse or not as a kid, but the great Todd Archer joining us here on 105 through the Fan. Morning, Todd. How we doing?
Morning, guys. Did not play lacrosse.
What was your did you play any sports growing up, or were you just were you instead just taking the girls out on the town and stuff?
Soccer, basketball, and baseball.
Oh, look at that, multi-sport athlete!
Look at that. Okay,
what a superstar! All right, Todd, I was listening to G-Bag Nation yesterday, and there was an intense fight between Gavin Dawson and Brian Broaddus that we're actually going to be playing a little bit later. But there was basically a disagreement over the idea of picking a wide receiver and the fact that they didn't get out of draft weekend without a wide receiver. Do you think the Cowboys at all look at this past weekend and say that was a failure? Like, we should have still gotten a receiver, even though we feel good about things. That was a failure of the draft plan. We didn't end up getting that. Or do you think they say, no, it would have been reckless for us to take a receiver based on how our board fell?
Both. This is the running back situation from last year, right? Where they didn't get a running back and everybody's saying, what are you doing? You didn't go get a running back. And then you signed Zeke. And, you know, so they lamented that fact, the fact that they didn't get a runner after when they saw how the season played out. And now they're going to say, hey, we followed our board. The top three guys were all the highest rated dudes and all that kind of stuff. And then when the season plays out, if they don't add somebody else through a trade or add somebody in free agency, they're going to say, we probably should have got a wide receiver. Now, the one thing I will say, and I'm probably not saying anything you guys haven't said, is once you got to like fifth, sixth, seventh round, were any of those guys going to be better than Flournoy or Brooks or Tolbert or push anybody down the depth chart? They might be the same, but they're not going to push anybody down the depth chart. And I realize you can point out some guy that was taken somewhere that eventually proved to be better than what he was. But these guys, you follow your board. This is where they led you. And this is what they did. But I don't think they're done at receiver. I think they're going to get somebody.
Yeah, and so what is the approach in terms of adding to the receiver group then? Is it going to be a case where they're going to look at the free agent market? Are they going to call on trades? Is it going to be something where – maybe similar to how they approached pass rusher last year, where they got to camp, waited to see what they had and waited to see what was available and then tried to make moves. How do you think they're going to approach it?
I think they would want to get something done sooner rather than later. And that doesn't mean this week, but certainly sooner than getting out to Oxnard when they added some guys. That was more out of desperation. They don't want to be desperate again in that respect. But, yeah, they're looking for agency. We've all talked about Amari's name and Keenan Allen and guys that are available. And then the trades, you know, the possibility that Jerry kind of let loose before the draft that they're working on substantive deals to add some players before or after the draft. I'm sure that's being revisited. We know teams that might have a surplus of receivers now based on what they've done in the draft. And maybe the Cowboys call them and see what they can work out. And we know that the Cowboys don't like their fourth round pick, so whoever they get, right, they'll get it before a fourth round pick.
Is that I was thinking the same question, like, you know, joking about that, but yeah, is that what we're looking at? Like a player that would have a return of a fourth rounder if they were going to trade?
I mean, yeah, it might be. Ultimately, I bet you that's what they hope it would be. I don't think they want to give up a top three pick because, you know, they unless there's some certainty that comes with that player in terms of the contract that the player is currently on or the contract that they want to sign the player to. So it might be a situation where whoever they've targeted, they're able to talk to the agent before and say, hey, we've got this deal going with Team X. What are you guys looking for a contract extension? And they work something out that way. I think that's how they would like to approach it. And maybe it turns into a fourth round that turns into a third round, or a third round that turns into a second round, or depending on how the guy plays here. I think they're kind of open to all avenues to acquire a number two receiver.
Todd Archer joining us here at 105 through the Fan. Were they close to moving back into the first round at all? Did you catch anything on that?
I did not hear anything on that. I heard it was all kind of quiet when I would reach out to guys in the draft moving back in, and every time I got a no. And even in the fourth round, I kind of thought they were going to do something, and that didn't happen. So I didn't get a sense that they were close to moving back into the first round.
Todd,
am I missing something? Is there something?
No, I was just curious. I was just curious.
Yeah.
Todd,
Paxton Lynch was not able to go yet in this draft, so they weren't looking to do that.
Done that.
Todd, I'm curious, you know, when we talk about the Tet McMillan versus Tyler Booker discussion, a lot of people were upset that they didn't get McMillan, obviously. I mean, they didn't really have a choice, obviously. But when they look at that comparison right there, do you think, like I've gotten the sense, Booker and McMillan were probably closer graded than I think people anticipate? Like it feels like a lot of fans, I think, thought, man, we're taking this huge drop to Booker now from McMillan. But I think they were graded at least somewhere similarly in the same ballpark, to the point where they were just going to take the receiver because that was more of a need. But it's not like Booker was graded significantly different from where they have McMillan.
So this is where I come out with, like, the broadest grade. Like, that's a 1-5-4-3.
I would hope it's not a 1-5-4. That's a fifth rounder, Todd.
Well, you know what I'm saying. I'm just throwing numbers out there. I believe Tyler Booker was their highest rated offensive lineman that they had entering the draft. Mm-hmm. So even the dudes that went above him, the Cowboys had Tyler Booker more highly rated. And we'll find out if they're right or wrong and how they evaluated and where they put their guys. We're going to find out when those guys get on the field. But if you're at the 12th pick and your highest rated player at X position is there, I don't think you can begrudge them making that move for quote a guard, as some people have. I mean, Quentin Nelson went 6th overall, yeah, I think, in 2018.
Yep.
I don't think the Colts have regretted that move once. Nor should they. And look, the next day when that kid came in for that press conference, and I'm not judging the pick by how he talked to us, man, that was impressive. Like, it was like, okay, now you see what they're getting and what they've done. And Schottenheimer is like 3 feet from me, and the entire time he's just like smiling with like confidence and just saying, see, this is what we were talking about with this kid. You know, look, in this mini camp, we're not going to find out anything either. We'll find out when we get to Oxnard. But everything you've heard about this guy has been impressive. Everything he has shown you to be in the little bit that we've been around him has been impressive. And again, I think when you look at where he was on their board, and let's say Golden or Abuka or Burden or whoever, their draft grades were probably not close at all to where he was on their board.
Todd Archer joining us from ESPN here on 105 Through the Fan. Todd, when you talk about how impressive Tyler Booker was, and we've heard a lot about Ezeraku and his character and Revell, do you think that portion of it right there is the Schottenheimer stamp on this draft? Like, is that a reflection of Schottenheimer's voice mattered in this process, or is that just it fell that way and was coincidental?
You know, Bobby, I'm reminded of a former head coach that was around the Dallas Football Cowboys for about 9 or 10 years, where he would say they're the right kind of guy.
Yeah. He'd tell you that over a couple lemonades?
It was a couple lemonades. He talked about strawberries and snakes and all that kind of stuff. I would say yes. I don't want to say that was Schottenheimer's influence about the character part of it, but he has talked about how character matters and changing the culture and doing all these things, which is what it's funny to me. Like, we're all like, yeah, look at Shotty go, look at him cook. He's like, Jason Garrett said the same stuff 10 years ago. Like, and I know I'm saying it's wrong, and I'm not right. Like, but we've heard this stuff before. There was one draft where I think they got a bunch of captains in it under Jason Garrett too. So I think Shotty's influence was continually telling the scouts, and he said it to us a couple of times, hey, you guys are the experts. Here's what we like and what we want, but you guys are the experts. And when you look at where the guys were, you know, Booker was high on their board. Azaraku was higher on their board. The guys that they got on day three, I don't know if they have one guy that they picked in the seventh round that actually had a seventh round grade on him. So, you know, I think his influence was being involved in the process and letting the scouts realize that, like, this is you guys. We're going to help you, but this isn't about us. This is about you. And it kind of led them to good character guys, because he repeated that. So maybe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy a little bit, but I think the scouts and the people that I've talked to over there just appreciated the fact that he was in it the entire time and knew everybody, and the coaches that they brought in knew what they wanted and knew how to express their feelings about what they wanted to the scouts.
Todd, you know, we heard a little bit of rumble, I guess, that, you know, Mike McCarthy had wanted a bigger say, I guess, if he had returned. And Brian Schottenheimer, when he got hired, you know, the fan line was, oh, here's Jerry's puppet. But the idea, it seems like, is that I think one of the misnomers, at least from my perspective, I don't know about you, is that the Joneses want their coach involved. In they do give a lot of say and a lot of power over there. Like, for instance, I think McCarthy may have had more say than he even realized at times. Or Schottenheimer, I don't think, was coming in here as any sort of a figure, because at the end of the day, the Joneses do want input from the head coach.
I've said this for a long time now to people who ask, and I always say the head coach has the most powerful voice in the organization if he chooses to use it. I mean, Chan Gailey wanted nothing to do with Randy Moss. They didn't draft Randy Moss. Like, this is, I mean, if you want to use your voice, you've got to put the work in and be involved and make sure you know what's going on. You can't just be kind of a toe dipper, as Parcells would call some running backs back in the day. You had to be all in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jason Garrett was all in during his run here during the draft. And I think Shotty was as well. And but I think you're right, Bobby. I think the Jones, I don't want to say Steven, Jerry will acquiesce more to the coach more than people ever want to think he was. I've been covering this team since 2003, and there's probably, I can count on one hand how many times Jerry said, no, this is what we're doing, over the objections of the head coach, and doing it anyway. And Greg Hardy, T.O., and I'm going to leave somebody out that I'm not thinking of, but I got three other spots there that I can go, because I only have five fingers. I don't have six.
Well, I think, you know, it was, if I remember right, didn't Bill want Spears over Ware at the time, you know, like, or Merriman?
Yeah. No, it to a degree, although when people say that Bill didn't want Ware, I always remind them of the interview Ed Werder did with him 25 minutes after they picked Ware. And he compared him to Lawrence Taylor.
Right.
Bill Parcells, if he didn't want DeMarcus Ware, he wasn't going to compare him to Lawrence Taylor.
Mm. Fair. Todd Archer here, 105 through the Fan. If Vegas had them as a 7.5 on their win total, you know, last year, if they were, you know, obviously 7-win team last year, but they have Dak for the full season, How much better do you think they are right now than they were at the end of the season?
I think they're better because Dak is healthy, CD is healthy. Theoretically, Sam Williams is going to be playing. That should make them better. Dante Fowler is a better pass rusher. I realize they lost DeMarcus Lawrence, but he only played four games last year. I think they're better than what they were last year, but I don't know how much they've closed the gap on Philadelphia. And I'm not even going to go with Washington. I'm just going to say Philly because that's all that really matters. So that's why there's still work to do. I will say this. I think they will be a better team than we believe record-wise. So I would take the over on 7.5. But I don't know if it was 9.5. I don't know if I'd take that over.
Todd, you know, you mentioned Dak being healthy. Is there obviously they always want to do anything they can to avoid injury, but do you think that this most recent injury and the fact that this has been cropping up a lot more in recent years, do you think the Cowboys have something in their head of like, hey, we got to have like a some sort of plan in place to make sure that he's not overexerting himself and we're not putting ourselves in this situation where he's missing multiple games again?
I don't know how you do that at that position. There are other positions where you can do it. We've seen Zach Martin and Tyron Smith not really practice during the week and come out and play and play pretty well here a couple of years ago even. We've seen DeMarcus Lawrence the same thing. I don't know how you can do that at quarterback necessarily because of the time involved and the need, but I think maybe it's in the off season. Obviously, they're going to limit Dak because he's coming back from the surgery, even if he's going to be fine, and maybe a little bit in training camp. But he's going to be a guy who hadn't played a football game since, when was Atlanta, November 3rd or something like that. So he's going to need to get back into the rhythm of playing football again, and I think that's Dak's thing. Like, he's not a guy who can just come out and not play for a while and be great immediately. So I think they'll monitor him to a degree. But some of the injuries that he's had, it's like, okay, he busted his thumb on a dude's helmet, right? Like, how do you prevent that? The ankle injury, how do you prevent that other than say, please don't ever run again? Well, that's not realistic. And then the same thing with this hamstring deal. So some of it's not preventable. It's not like he's had a bunch of soft tissue injuries, and I'm not counting this hamstring as a soft tissue injury by any stretch, considering the muscle tore off the bone.
Right.
Maybe technically it is, but it certainly sounds a lot more involved than just a normal hamstring injury. But I think they'll try and be as smart as they can with him. And I think the one good thing about maybe limiting him in the offseason through the OTAs and minicamp is that you're giving Joe Milton a lot more work than he probably would have gotten as the number two quarterback in the spring. Then you can see what you have there and get him acclimated to what you'd want to do offensively. So maybe there's a side bonus there, but I don't know. They still have to get Dak's work because he's going to need it.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, fellas.
Todd Archer joining us here, 105.3 The Fan. It is the commercial-free expressway.
The great Todd Archer. He's really good. I didn't know he was a three-sports star, though.
Three-sports star, man.
I'll tell you, he's a big lover of that Cincinnati Skyline chili.
Yeah.
He does love that.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a character flaw.
I do. Can I just really quickly, before we go to this, why is that a problem? Chili, like with spaghetti, I don't understand. Like, it is sauce-like.
It's not a problem. It's a problem that you use the word chili with it. That's the problem.
I don't think so. Okay, whatever.
That's the problem. That's the problem, boys and girls. Let's hook you up, Solos.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Amazing time out here in Anna, Firehouse stop number two. Nick Harris, former Star Telegram draft show brethren,
what's up,
joining
fellas?
Us here. Sean and RJ, Zach Wolchuk in for Sean. Of course, we got the greatness that is Bobby Belt.
Yes.
How are you, Nick? Well, it still ended up being a long drive for you.
You know, I have beef with this place. Not the fire station.
Oh, I was going to say.
That's fight. They're big.
Yeah, I don't want to pick that fight. My hometown of Chapel Hill a couple of years ago got beat by Anna in the state championship 26 to nothing. So this was basically like asking me to come to Busch Stadium after the 2011 World Series.
I mean, you can't finish any better than that. They finished on top because they went to 5A right
We could have finished better
no,
than
no,
that.
No, I'm talking about Anna. Anna went to 5A after that.
Yeah,
they ended their entire 4A career with that.
Some cheaters.
Before we jump into all the interview stuff, I got to give some shout-outs here. We've had Joe from Anna come out here, Jeff and Hal, and then we just said hi to Jennifer, Nick, and their little man Rhett was up here, all from Anna. So Anna's showing out here. The whole general area is showing up here. Now, Zach, you mentioned that, because we're going to talk about Amari Cooper and some other things here with Nick Harris in just a second.
Yeah.
You mentioned that he's your draft show brethren, and Nick was the one
who was
first seen on camera a couple days ago when you had this wonderful moment.
Stop.
This wonderful moment while interviewing UCLA defensive tackle, New Dallas Cowboy, Jay Toia.
All right, Jay, so can we teach the entire defensive front the haka and make sure we do this every pregame?
I mean, I'm not a haka specialist, you know. That's more like Marin's, you know. I'm Tongan, so I'm not really a haka specialist, but I think we can try.
We can try.
Well, we appreciate you taking some time. All right, Jay Toy joining us here on the...
Don't put the camera on.
What are we doing?
If your brother's a rugby player in New England...
double down.
Are you not?
It doesn't mean he knows how to do it.
I get okay. Well, if you're
down,
we need your brother.
I dare you to walk up to him.
I will. I'll do it in Oxnard.
Just break down and start to.
Is that racist?
Not at all. Ulysses does it before every game.
That's racist, bro.
How?
That's racist, bro.
I'm Tongan, bro.
They all the same. They all do that little dance. Hey Jay, why don't you do that little dance y'all do?
I gotta step out. I'm serious.
What's that thing y'all do? The haka? Do that haka.
That was not good.
I stepped out and I went into the studio and they were all in the floor in there. And I was like, I can't be in here either.
That was great.
It could have been worse, though.
Yeah.
It could have been worse because Zach actually left his notes around the draft show studio.
Oh, no.
So, like, he had questions prepped for so many guys that didn't end up in Dallas.
He did.
Yeah, I'm just going to make him read some of them since I took them. This is one of the questions he had ready for Tetero and McMillan.
Mahalo, Ted.
Oh, no.
I was curious to know if those coconut bras they wear in Hawaii are real.
It just seems a little uncomfortable to ask that question. Jihad Campbell ended up with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Hey, careful,
but
Zach.
That's what he was going to ask to Dallas.
Jihad Campbell, congrats on being drafted. I guess just explain your name for us.
Mason Taylor, tight end that Zach was a big fan of, LSU.
Did love him, my number two tight end. Mason, is it true Jason Whitlock ruined PB&J sandwiches for you?
Wow. Had to. That peanut butter
that
skin.
Peanut butter skin.
Man. Isaac Kessler, really impressive wide receiver from Arkansas.
Very. Isaac, how often do people set you on fire?
Tesla, it's a big issue these days. Landon Jackson.
Wow, I get you there.
No.
Landon, what? These are Zach's questions. Don't get worked up. Landon Jackson, the defensive end from Arkansas.
Throw it on me. Where the hell is your hair, bro? You got that Jada Pinkett disease or what?
Wait a second.
What? Zach. What the hell? That's an offensive thing to like.
Is that?
To prep for that, well, to write that question.
I feel like Jada Pinkett was fair game.
Yeah.
I think so.
It's just
after her entanglement.
Yeah, exactly. And then this was the last, the very first pick of the fourth round. Chimiri DK.
Okay. Are you sure you're saying your last name right?
So those, I'm glad it just ended up with Jay Toye and the Hawkins. Yeah. That could have been really uncomfortable.
Yep, thank God. Thank God for that.
Jeez. Amari Cooper.
So dangerous.
Let's talk about Amari Cooper here with Nick Harris.
Very feels so good,
Nick,
on me, Jay.
This is something where I think a lot of people wondered, have there been too many hurt feelings for Amari Cooper to reconcile with this team? Is that even going to be possible? But, you know, you've said that this is somebody that is absolutely on the radar for the Cowboys, as they still haven't filled that wide receiver two hole.
Yeah, absolutely. Going into the fifth round on day three, well, going into the first round, we could start there. Tutteroa McMillan was the top target going into the night, being like, hey, if he's there at 12, it's an easy turn-in for us. We don't need to wait for the phone to ring for a trade back. You know, we're going to make this happen. Obviously, he was not there. He goes to the Carolina Panthers. What was that at pick number 8? And they pick Booker. So they go into day 2, don't get a receiver. Go into day 3, they have an opportunity in the fifth round to pick a receiver in that instance. Instead, they go with Shamar James. And after that, receiver was off the board for the rest of the draft. And so, you know, when I put in the article on Monday that Amari Cooper has had building interest coming out of the draft, it's like, okay, we need to look around to see who are available as far as trade targets. They had already been doing work ahead of the draft in that sense. And then obviously the free agent market. Amari Cooper was a name that was getting tossed around before the draft. But since the draft, I say building team interest because they don't have a receiver coming out of the draft. And so there's plenty of options on the table. You know, whether it's a George Pickens or a Rashad Bateman, we talked about those as far as trade targets. There's trade targets around the league, and I think that's what Dallas is really trying to sort through at the moment to try to find that established number two. But if they can't, I think Amari Cooper is their safe fallback option. I say fallback because they still feel confident that Amari Cooper can be a number two, that he can be a productive wide receiver in the league. And if you're looking at Amari Cooper's market, it's not that strong, so I feel like they could get it at a pretty good price, and they can move forward with it.
So does the rest of the league think he could be a number two still?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's I'm not confident in that just based on what happened last year with him. Going back to 2023, obviously he had a pretty strong season with Cleveland. But you wonder if maybe he just never had his feet right in Cleveland with the quarterback change and all the drama going on there. And then he gets to Buffalo. Keon Coleman starts to emerge. Khalil Shakir begins to emerge almost as soon as he gets there. He dealt with an injury as soon as he got there, so it took him a while to get on the field. And then all of a sudden he has free agent market. So it's not really like he had any time to really get his feet rolling. But you have to take that for what it is, especially at the wide receiver position with the age that he is. It's certainly a factor in this whole ordeal too.
What are the chances that we roll into training camp and they're just going to roll with the receivers that they have, and they say Jonathan Mingo is going to get the shot at number two?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. At least as far as the people that are pushing behind the doors for this to get addressed, for them to get a number two wide receiver. My question is, does it happen before OTAs? Does it happen before mandatory minicamp in early June? OTAs start on May 19th. Obviously, the comp pick formula has been worked out as of Monday at 4 p.m., so they can work toward finding a free agent if they do want to pull the trigger on an Amari Cooper or a Keenan Allen or one of these other names that are available. But I think they're doing their due diligence in the trade market right now, and they feel selectively aggressive in that trade market right now. I'll tell you that there have been names that they have done research on, they've done homework on. Obviously, nothing has just come to fruition yet.
On the McMillan front, he was their top guy, but this is something we were discussing actually yesterday on the draft show, the wrap-up. You weren't able to make it. I know Zach was banned by football ops from being in the building at the same time as Jay Toyea.
So, yeah.
But with the Tet McMillan pick, I think a lot of people, we haven't discussed a whole lot this angle of McMillan. I don't think was so much higher than Booker actually on their board. Like I think they had Booker graded similarly. It's just the need was there with receiver that would have just made it such a slam dunk. But for people who are maybe upset with the Booker pick, like, and really wanted McMillan, this is a player they got that the Cowboys graded similarly to McMillan.
Booker is a dude, and you could see it from that introductory press conference he had on Friday. And if you haven't had the opportunity to go listen to that or watch that, I mean, it's an impressive young man. You understand how they graded him so high character-wise, and then you see him on the field too, and you understand why they graded him so high from a play perspective. I mean, they're expecting him to come in and start day one at right guard, and there's nothing to think that he can't do that.
Yeah, it's amazing. If you didn't like the Tyler Booker pick, just listen to him speak.
and he'll win you over. I wanted to throw a trade name out there for you guys that maybe we haven't talked about as much.
It's got
to
be for a fourth rounder, though. That's all we
okay.
do.
Okay, well, you know, be for a fourth. The way that I would do this, it might be actually you send a player to this team just to kind of get the contracts ready to go. And there's nothing of substance to this at all.
It's You're trying to trade Jay Toya already?
No. JT's my guy. I don't want him going anywhere. Jeez. This would be...
My guy.
DJ, this is
we'll see what he thinks
my
about
guy.
That.
We're going to become best friends. Don't worry about it. You know, learn this dance, and it's going to be awesome. DJ Moore in Chicago. They just drafted Luther Burden. They've got Roma Dunze. DJ Moore is a name that they've kind of thrown out there as possibly a guy that could be on the market. I believe the Cowboys had him graded pretty highly in that 2018 class when they ended up taking Leighton Vander Esch. Now, that is a contract. You are going to be picking up a big salary.
Yeah.
Corner is thin. But Trayvon Diggs, in my opinion, is a player that if he were healthy, I think they already would have tried, if not moved him. Is that possibly maybe you talk about a player for player? Cowboys probably have to throw in a little bit extra because you have an injured guy there that we're not sure when he's officially going to get back. But maybe it's not even, hey, Diggs is involved in this at all. But out of the options, I know George Pickens has been thrown out there. Some have talked about Cortland Sutton. I know the return we talked about was foolish on that. But DJ Moore kind of is the most intriguing name for me if they were to try and trade for somebody.
Yeah, he has the $27.5 million APY average per year. Year that would be really tough on the Cowboys books this year. Now you're throwing the proposition at me of trading Diggs mm-hmm. in that sense. I don't see Chicago taking that just because they don't need Diggs and especially they don't need an injured guy to take from DJ Moore.
What about Guyton? Yeah, I mean, if you want to get really crazy, Guyton.
I don't, if you're Chicago, are you doing that in your right mind?
I mean, if Chicago needs offensive line help and they say it's a
I don't think
year.
They need it that bad.
Well, okay, so I'm gonna defend Tyler Guyton a little
no,
bit.
I'm not pooping on Tyler Guyton.
No,
just,
I know.
This is DJ Moore.
No, we're talking about a really high quality receiver.
Guyton and a fourth or Guyton and a third or something like that.
Yeah, I'd rather,
I was looking at Diggs and a four.
Yeah, I'd rather just give up a two at that point.
Me too, actually.
Yeah, I would rather just give up a two for an established receiver and a guy that will be here 4 or 5 years, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Would a two get that done, though?
DJ Moore?
Yeah.
That would be tough. I mean, the contract number, maybe, because you could be like, hey, you're going to have to pay this guy. You're going to have to pay that guy. You know, DJ Moore, if you want to offload those books. But you look at their receiving core last year, it was DJ Moore leading the way. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Chicago's ready to part with him.
Why have the Cowboys found themselves, do you think, in this position so much over the last 20 years where it's they need to go make a big trade for – I mean, just go back to the start of the 2000s, the trade that ruined Brian Broaddus's potential to rebuild the Cowboys through the draft. You trade Joey Galloway 2 first-round picks. Then it was Roy Williams for first-rounders. Then they were willing to pony up the money for Amari Cooper, sending a first-rounder. Mm-hmm. They've always been willing to pay that tax on the receiver position. But why have they, in these intervals of about 8 years, it seems like, because here we are at another one, why have they been stuck in this position of, like, we are in a jam and we need to trade big capital for a receiver?
Yeah, I don't know if I have an answer for you there. I think maybe there's part of it where it's like, okay, maybe they're not getting ahead on these needs as quickly as they should. I mean, we could be looking at the corner position right now, right? And you see on the horizon, hey, Deron Bland is going to be out of his contract coming out of next season. Trayvon Diggs, is he going to be fully healthy? I mean, that would be something that, hey, look around. If you weren't discussing a wide receiver situation right now, you could look around and be like, hey, let's get ahead on this corner situation. I think they're just kind of always playing behind the eight ball in some instances there. But, you know, you mentioned the Amari Cooper ordeal, and that was in 2018. And at the very least, Amari Cooper is already factoring into their thought process here because they waited until midseason to do that. They're trying to get ahead of this before the training camp even starts so that they have that established core ready to go and they can roll into 2025 with whoever the Robin is to see these Batman.
A big complaint, too, is they just haven't taken a lot of wide receivers high in the draft. I mean, it's been Dez and CeeDee Lamb. But otherwise, what other first-round wide receivers have they really targeted or even second-round receivers?
And, I mean, they've always really liked guys. Like, they liked McMillan this year. They weren't able to get him. They loved Drake London a couple years ago. He wasn't able to get to him. In fact, to that point where people say, I really wish they would have drafted a wide receiver somewhere in the first three rounds. Is it just a case where they found themselves in basically a purgatory position on the draft board where it's like, yeah, if McMillan gets to 12, we're taking McMillan. If Burden gets to 44, we're taking Burden. If Besh. If Besh gets to 76, we're taking Besh.
Like, is it a case just where the Cowboys just had bad luck with the way the board fell, being in the in their draft position?
Yeah, you talk about reaching and picking a wide receiver at any point for the Cowboys, other than that fifth round spot, which I think Nick Eatman said yesterday, Keandre Lambert-Smith was the target there in the back end of the fifth round out of Auburn. That one would have been fun to add to this offense, but other than that selection, you would have been reaching at that position anywhere else. And you know, we've given credit to the scouting department and to this front office for sticking to their board during this draft. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's why they have such a strong class, but they still have to address this receiver spot, and the guys they have on the team right now are not going to be that.
Nick Harris, Forward Star Telegram, with us here, Sean and RJ, live in Anna, Firehouse Stop number 2.
305 South Powell Parkway, if you want to come out, still get some Whataburger and some giveaways. The question at Rookie Minicamp Friday, Saturday of this week, is there anything that is you've got an intrigue for, whether it be in any of the undrafted free agents, or to see, do you think potentially the Cowboys are seeing, all right, how does this group of players play out before next week we decide to do anything on the front of going and getting depth at receiver or corner or anywhere else?
Yeah, rookie minicamp is fascinating for me for the undrafted guys, is because I'm looking at a couple already going into the weekend. Elijah Clark out of Syracuse, they gave him the third most guaranteed money of any undrafted free agent in the NFL. That almost certainly tells you, hey, he's got an inside track at getting a 53-man spot on the roster after training camp. Brevin Spanford had the same situation last year. Hunter Lipke had it the year before that, and both of those guys made the 53. So that's me kind of theorizing in my head. It's like, okay, then what are they thinking at the safety position? Yeah. Or is he a versatile guy?
And just to add on to that, they love Clark.
Yeah,
they Clark, really like Clark.
Stephen Jones said in his presser, or they said in the day three presser after it was all said and done, that they signed or they agreed to terms at that point with their highest-rated undrafted free agent ever, and it was Elijah Clark. So I would have to assume, this is me just assuming, that he had probably a fifth on their board, maybe a late fourth. I mean, I would have to assume, like, the highest ever.
Jackson
I know
Carman,
Romo was a fifth.
Jackson Carman was a fourth, okay. I think, for them. Okay. So that would be wild. Wow. Or
yeah,
Stephen's misremembering.
That would be wild. It had been 3 days by that point. His voice was hoarse on day one.
I mean,
probably forgets
some things. 35 years of draft boards, too. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, there's also some big business marketing going on there, too. I'm looking at Elijah Clark, and then I'm looking at Bruce Harmon out of Stephen F. Austin coming into this corner situation. You know, does he have any shot at being a depth corner on this roster? They're dealing with a lot of injuries at that position, not only Trayvon Diggs, but Josh Butler they're trying to get back. But not a lot of confidence in Andrew Booth. So it's where does the depth of that corner spot go? That's a guy I'm looking at to potentially make some noise.
When it comes to the name Isaiah Bond, I think that is the name that we've gotten a ton of questions on. G-Bag, the text is coming in now. Twitter as well. You know about
Texas receiver.
Yeah, Texas wide receiver that went undrafted.
Right.
Was supposed to be their number one, and then obviously Matthew Golden kind of ended up taking that role as the season went on. You covered him as a recruit coming out of high school. Obviously know him very, very well. What is it with Isaiah Bond right now? Why the league seems to be like, we're going to stay away.
Yeah, awaiting the finality of the situation that he's dealing with the sexual assault allegation. And I think one thing to note where as it pertains to the Cowboys is this allegation happened in the city of Frisco. The Cowboys have an inside track at getting the details of this case more than any other team in the league. So if it hadn't happened by now for the Cowboys, I don't think it's going to. And on top of that, even before this, Isaiah Bond had some concerns coming into the draft process. You know, there are some things, you know, just from his time at Texas and Alabama that teams are like, I think we're good. And, you know, the type of guy that Brian Schottenheimer has said and has proven to be adding to this team over the course of the last few months, I don't know if Bond fits that mold.
Here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for making us part of your day. We have a C-Note coming up here at 3:20, Cowboys News of the Evening. Time now to talk with John Owning, Pro Football Focus. Following this draft, big eventful Cowboys offseason hopefully coming up. John, how the heck are you this afternoon?
He's in the building! Doing great. Finally out of the draft storm. You know, done working 13-hour days, so it's nice.
Yes,
nice.
I can imagine, and it looks like you've been watching these new Cowboys quite a bit. Do you like overall what they did?
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge fan of what the Cowboys did, especially on the first 2 days. And even on day three, I like a lot of the picks they did, even though some of them weren't, you know, ideally what I would have done. But, you know, kicking off the draft with Tyler Booker, Donovan Azaroku, and Shavon Ravel, I think it's tough to beat those three in their entirety. Personally, I had Ravel and Ezeraku ranked a little bit higher than Tyler Booker pre-draft, but the fact that you're able to grab all three in the first three rounds, I think that's just a fantastic haul.
Tell me more about what you're seeing with Ezeraku and what you think he can do in the NFL year one.
Oh, I love Ezeraku. I think he was one of the most technically sound and best pass rushers in this entire class. He was my second-rated edge defender behind Abdul Carter. The major thing that I love about him is just the efficiency of his movement. He doesn't waste a lot of steps. You see a lot of younger edge defenders, or younger pass rushers, they waste a lot of movement on their way to the quarterback. And when you're racing to the quarterback and how quickly those quarterbacks are getting the ball out these days, you have to be efficient with your movement. Every step has to be gaining ground on the quarterback. And I think Ezeraku does that extremely well. When he's cornering, he's not taking extra steps. He's not having to gear down because he has to slow to maintain his balance. He's able to maintain his balance at high speeds with great bend and great closing speed. And I think his ability to chain together moves, the setup moves, to win with his hands, to be able to slip punches, parry punches, all those things are going to make him a very effective pass rusher. I think even from year one, I think he's someone who can give you, you know, 6 to 8 sacks in year one if he gets enough snaps, if he gets enough time on the field, for sure.
John, when it comes to the first round pick, Tyler Booker, some of the criticisms are just the lack of athleticism, especially like the combine numbers and stuff. What would you say in response to that?
I'm a big person on, I think athleticism really matters in the NFL, but the position where I think it arguably matters the least is the guard position. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just because things like angles, pace, those type of things matter so much more than overall raw athleticism. I mean, we saw Travis Frederick here, who is arguably a worse athlete than Tyler Booker, and he was still able to be very successful on those movement type plays, on zone runs where he has to reach a one technique, or he's pulling out on a gap run, or, you know, he's even getting out on a screen. We saw that the things that matters on those are just your ability to play with pace and your ability to take good angles to your good blocking angles. Those things matter way more than your ability, how fast you are in a straight line, or those type of things. But I would even say the people that are really worried about his tested athleticism, the one combine or pro day drill that really translate even adequately well to offensive line play is the 20-yard shuttle. And Tyler Booker's 20-yard shuttle tested into the 74th percentile, the one he did at his pro day with Alabama. And that's a very good score that I think kind of illustrates that he does have the functional athleticism to succeed in the NFL at the guard position for sure.
How do you think this, like, what do you expect this rushing attack to look like with Clayton Adams now, Connor Riley on the coaching staff, Booker now added in, you bring in Jaden Blue. How do you imagine this looks?
I think a big thing, we're going to be living in a duo world, baby, double teams up front, yeah. As many double teams as you can create to create that vertical displacement, you know, be able to have a running back that can jockey with that micro, that will linebacker, depending on the front that they're facing. And he can either hammer it down inside or he can bounce it outside. You know, those type of things. I think we're going to see a ton of inside zone, a ton of duo, those inside runs. And when they want to get outside, I think you're going to see some power, some counter, some of those type of things. Maybe a little bit of, you know, Brian's favorite pin and pull. We'll see a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a much more varied look than we've seen in the past. Clayton Adams, I know when he was with Brian and everybody at the draft show, he was talking about how he's going to run the things that are the strengths of his offensive line. And I think that's something that's going to be very successful because you do have an offensive line that can run a bunch of different concepts. You know, people don't think that Booker should be pulling a lot, but I think, like I said before, he has the functional athleticism to pull on occasion if you need him to do. Tyler Smith obviously has the functional athleticism to pull. Guyton does, Terrence Steele does, all these guys can move. So I think that those kind of combinations give you a lot of flexibility with the way that you can attack defenses. And I think you're going to see the Cowboys be a type of team that is more defense dependent and is what they're going to do. Maybe some days they're going to be more of an inside zone team versus a certain scheme. And then other times you're going to see them really try to attack the edges with those, you know, pin and pulls or those power schemes, those counter schemes, those type of things. So I just think you're going to see a much more modular running system than we have seen in the past.
John, how concerned should we be about the Blues' issues with fumbling? I tried to reach out to people in Texas and talk about it and see if there was anything they did. I haven't heard back, but I was just wondering from your evaluation point.
It's definitely the major concern. I mean, when watching him, I think he has a lot of the traits that you want in a quarter in a running back that can vie for being in a starter immediately almost. He has the speed. He has the patience behind the line when he's running in between the tackles. You even seen him really well be able to manipulate second-level defenders. His big run against Clemson, he had a run designated to hit, I believe it was the B-gap, the weak side B-gap.
Yeah.
And there was a free linebacker that was he was scraping over to the A, but he could have scraped over to the B, but you saw him jab step at that A gap that pulled in that middle linebacker. So then he had no opportunity to get to that B gap once Blue accelerated and that allowed him to get, I think it was like a 77-yard touchdown run. And that's kind of the thing that he does extremely well is when he has a little bit of a, I don't want to say he needs a runway, but when he has space to make decisions and to make people miss, he does that at an extremely high level. As long as he's not getting backfield penetration, I think he's going to do a ton of good things. But the fumbling is a big concern. You know, it's something that, you know, you need to glue the ball to him. I don't know if he has to carry it with him, sleep with it, what he has to do. But I do think it's something that's inherently fixable. It's not something that is dire, I would say, for his career. I think it's one of those things that it has to come from him. No one else is going to be able to fix it. He just has to make the concerted effort to have the concentration to put in the work necessary to fix that aspect of his game.
It's John Owning of Pro Football Focus here with you in the G-Bag Nation talking Cowboys, formerly of the Dallas Morning News. Dogs are barking, John. What do you think the Cowboys are going to do with these corners? I mean, I know you love Revell there. Are they gonna pay Bland, keep Diggs, or is this like the 1 year where they had Lamb, Amari, and Gallup all together before money got involved?
I think that Diggs is kind of the guy that it should be most worried about his job. I think Bland, his ability to play outside and inside, that versatility and do both at such a high level, I think that makes him the type of guy that you need to really lock up for the future. And he's someone who I would be making as a clear priority to make sure he's on my team for the long distance future. And I think Revell, you know, he can, and he has a similar skill set to Trevon Diggs. So I think that makes Trevon Diggs out of all three, the most expendable one. And after last year, it's kind of hard to expect, you know, the top three corners to all play with each other. It seems like somebody always gets nicked up and prevents them from being on the field all at once. So I don't really have super high hopes in that category. But if they do get on the field, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a more talented top three cornerbacks in the league, for sure.
Is Revell going to tackle better?
I hope so. I think, especially in an Eberflus scheme, if he's not, he's not going to see the field.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think about the UCLA defensive tackle, JT? Do you think he's a guy that could be like in the starting lineup on rundowns and be better than Mozzie Smith?
Well, the first thing I learned is he's Tongan and not Maori, so he doesn't do the Hakka. But
that's a good point.
Things in scouting you learn there, man. Right,
yeah, John? You know, there are differences between the Pacific Islanders. Who would have known?
Who would have known?
But Jay Toliai is a guy before the draft I wasn't really a huge fan of. I just kind of get put off in the pre-draft process, but when I see nose tackles consistently get reached by centers on zone runs, I think that's something that, you know, specifically hampered the Cowboys a lot in the past. So it's something that kind of puts me off. And I think that kind of gave me a negative lens of his talent level and his kind of, you know, his grade. I gave him like, I think a sixth round grade. But when I went back and I watched him post-draft, you know, looking at him with a Cowboys eye and, you know, not having that kind of like negative lens cloud my judgment, you do see some positive traits that I think can make him someone who can contribute a role year one. You know, his ability to, you know, get off the ball quickly when he was playing in a more attack front, like he would be here against teams like, I think, Iowa and Nebraska games, especially, he showed the ability to make first contact, to create that push, to reset the line of scrimmage and to make plays in the backfield, or at least cause the kind of backfield disruption that allows others to make plays. I know Carson Schwechinger on more than a couple of those plays was able to make tackles because Jay Toliai set him up a free run to the ball carrier. So really impressed with that. I just really struggle with his lateral mobility, you know, against zone runs. I think he's the type of guy, put this on X, that against zone running teams, I think he's someone who's not going to really have much ability to function at a high, at a decent level, a starting level, a capable level in those games. But when we see teams that run more of a gap scheme, those duos, those big on big type of runs, those vertical downhill teams, those inside zone teams, I think you're going to see him have a little bit more success, and he's going to be able to function and have a pretty good role. So I think year one, he's going to kind of have a scheme dependent role. And then hopefully in year two, year three, maybe he loses 10 to 15 pounds or something and just get that lateral mobility so he could just stay connected to his gap just a little bit better on those type of zone runs.
Yeah, John, I think you have him right. I thought the wider you went on him, the more problems that he had right there, that he was, you know, when he just, you know, it wasn't, yeah, he would move his feet and all that, but he just maybe the little bit further to his right or to his left, there's some issues there with that.
Yeah, and I think a big issue of that is because he plays with a really narrow base a lot of times.
They might have to adjust that for sure.
Gets him displaced a lot by those double teams that hit him from like adjacent. When he's taking things on square, he's really tough to move, but when you get those lateral kind of moving double teams, he kind of gets displaced a little bit more than you would like to see, and that allows the adjacent gaps to really swell, and it makes life extremely difficult in the linebackers.
Your thought on Ezeraku, and I think to me with the Cowboys, I didn't really see this one materializing. You know, we were kind of doing pre-draft, we were talking maybe the defensive tackle, the one technique, we were talking corners, we were talking a lot of different things, but we weren't talking like edge rusher. Where did you have in relation to, say, some of the other pass rushers that were on your board?
Oh, Ezeraku, I would love him. He was my edge two behind Abdul Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Abdul Carter got a top 10 grade, but Ezeraku was the only other edge to get a first round grade. So
there you go.
He was like, I gave Mike Green was early round two grade, so he wasn't far away. But Ezeraku was definitively like my guy in this class. I think it's just the tech. You don't see very many guys come into the league that are as technically sound as him, that have the pass rush repertoire, the efficiency of movement, the ability to win in so many different ways, and the ability to know how to use those moves to win. He knows how to set them up and those things, and I was just extremely impressed. The one thing that I think hampered him in college was just light in the lower body. You know, he doesn't have that anchor to really hold on against bigger offensive tackles who are kind of base blocking him, or double teams between the tackle and the tight end. Those type of things give him some issues, but he still knows how to, he takes on blocks well, he plays with a good base. He just doesn't have that sheer strength and that lower body, you know, mass to really hold up in those situations. And that might just get exacerbated in the NFL. So I just think if you can put a little bit more weight on his lower half without sacrificing the athletic ability, he's someone who can have just not only an instant impact, but a prolonged impact. I said on Twitter that I think he could be a kind of a DeMarcus Lawrence type of second round pass rusher for the Cowboys. And everybody knows how much I love DeMarcus Lawrence.
That's right. John Owning, Pro Football Focus, with us here on The Fan. Should the Amari Cooper addition be a no brainer for these guys at this point?
I mean, I would. I think he's not the same Amari Cooper that he was for the Cowboys, but if he can give you what he was with the Browns in 2023, or even a little like 90% of that, I think he's by far the best wide receiver number two that you would have. And I think, you know, having that big body guy to be the number two, I think he complements CD Lamb extremely well, who likes to move around, play in the slot, playing all these different positions. So you need other receivers who can also move around depending on where CD Lamb is. And I think Amari Cooper fits that. And also, he's not going to be super expensive. So I think that that's something that's a positive as well.
Thank you so much for your Cowboys thoughts, John. Enjoy this offseason, and we'll try to catch up with you soon.
Hey, thank you guys a lot. Really appreciate it.
Salute to you. Yes, I must follow on Cowboys Twitter there, John Owning. Known him a long time now from his days in the morning news and now working for Pro Football Focus. But his understanding of like the analytics and the film and you know everything, he brings it all together quite well.
Sure does.
And former G-Bag of the Day champion as well.
That's right.
Freaking legend. List of
I thought you were going to put him on the list again with a question about his dog. Does he express his dog's little anal joy or whatever? Oh. Yeah. I heard a dog bark. I was like, oh, Eric, here it is, bro.
Missed opportunity. I'm kicking myself.
And he's a jujitsu guy too, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a big jujitsu guy there. I see him on his social media sometimes.
It's crazy. He's a jujitsu guy, but people were chiming in that his voice sounds like Tom Brady.
Really?
So what an incredible, I mean, he might hit all the right notes for Giselle.
I guess I do hear that a little bit now.
Jiu-jitsu and Tom Brady. I see what you're doing.
Look at that.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, John.
Matchmaker right here.
This is your time.
Does he have a girl?
Be the dad who stepped up, John.
Probably. You know, kind of like that.
Put her on the toes right now, though. You know what I mean? Get some act right around here.
Thinking about those dogs and expressing their glance, though, I think that's a deal breaker.
Yeah.
If I get a dog that needs to have that done, we're looking for another breed. I'm quite honestly shocked this thing's still around.
Express your damn self.
Is it bulldogs? Is it like a
special? Yeah, a lot of bulldogs.
The bulldogs. Yeah. Wow, they have a problem with their nose and their rear, huh?
Yes. Yeah. It's not good.
Front to back.
Yeah.
And their poor little hearts, too.
Really?
Yeah. Poor little hearts are terrible.
Oh, jeez.
They are cool. They're kind of cute and ugly at the same time, but dude, there's no way I'm going to ever do that to an animal, you know? Or especially, I'm not going to pay a lot of money for it. Those things cost you a couple grand.
They're expensive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They are.
Okay. What I think is the real story on why the Cowboys didn't take a wide receiver in the draft that's coming up next here in the G-Bag Nation. Here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Back Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a fantastic day. We are going to have Ross Tucker join us momentarily, the Odyssey NFL Insider, the podcaster, CBS Sports, Westwood One. And a reminder, the guys continue the Firehouse Tour tomorrow morning. Sean and RJ, the Firehouse Tour. They're going to be in Anna, and that show will start at 6 o'clock, celebrate DFW with firefighters together, as Ross Tucker said to join us now here on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan, brought to you by myfrontpagestory.com. And a good afternoon, Ross. How the heck are you?
I'm doing awesome. What's up, fellas? How are you doing?
Man, we're doing great. You know, seems like the Cowboys had a pretty good draft. What'd you think of Booker at 12?
Well, I mean, do you know who you're talking to right now?
Yeah.
I love Booker at 12. I mean, first of all, a couple of things. Number one, 2 years ago, I did the Ole Miss Alabama game for CBS. So it would have been like the fourth or fifth game of Booker's sophomore year, true sophomore year. And Nick Saban told us in the production meeting that Booker was more or less the leader of the team, certainly the leader of the offense. And I said, a guy not even midway through his second year? And he said, yep. He said, listen, if they're a good player, they're only here for 3 years. So I thought that spoke very, very well of Booker. I actually saw Booker down there in Frisco last summer at Duke Manyweather's O-Line Masterminds event. And it was like the other Alabama offensive lineman just followed him around. He was like the Pied Piper, right? Like, he is that guy. He is that type of leader, that type of personality. But then it's his play style that I adore, right? Blocking people, for those of you who've never done it before, blocking people, it's not really that fun. It's not that cool. You just kind of get in the way, and then you see somebody else score a touchdown, and the cheerleaders like them more than they like you, and they get their names in the newspaper. You don't. You know what's fun? Trying to kill dudes. Like trying to physically punish them and knock them to the ground. That is exactly what Tyler Booker likes to do. And in short order, I'll probably be talking about how the Cowboys have the best duo of guards in the NFL and maybe the two most physical guards as a pair in the NFL. I think that the Cowboys enhanced what they had with Tyler Smith and made a strength even stronger.
Ross, drafting a guy like Booker, what does that say about the plans, about the approach and the running style that Schottenheimer and this new crew wants to have?
Well, so remember, my rookie year in the NFL was 2001 with a guy named Marty Schottenheimer and the Washington Redskins. We led the NFC in rushing. Steven Davis led the NFC in rushing. We only ran like two plays. We ran power strong and lead weak, and it was awesome. We mashed people. Our quarterback was Tony Banks. We didn't have a great passing game. It didn't matter. I know, and Brian, by the way, was our quarterback coach that year. I know that deep down in his roots, Brian knows the effectiveness of a blunt, forceful rushing attack. And I would think that getting a guy like Booker reinforces that. And also this, by the way, I know everybody wanted a skill guy and a receiver or a running back hire. I know the way you guys operate. I get it, right? I'll just say this. The two teams that were in the Super Bowl, okay? The left guard for the Eagles makes $21 million a year. The right guard for the Chiefs is on the franchise tag for over $24 million a year. The point is you see what the Bears did this offseason. You see what the Vikings did this offseason. A lot of really smart teams, really smart people think that the interior trio is way important and very undervalued by some teams in today's NFL. When I played, I honestly think left guard, which is what I played for those seven games for the Cowboys, I think we were the least paid position in the NFL. I think we were the lowest paid position in the NFL. That has changed. People recognize not only being able to dent the defense in the run game, but how important it is for the quarterback for him to be able to step up. And with Tyler Smith, BB, or Brock Hoffman, whatever, and Tyler Booker, I would be surprised if they get a whole lot of push up the middle against the Dallas Cowboys.
I love it. We're talking with Ross Tucker here in the G-Bag Nation. With the skill players, specifically the running back position, that was one maybe we thought the Cowboys would address early. They go with Jadon Blue out of Texas, and then they circle back with Phil Maffa in the seventh round out of Clemson to pair with what they did in free agency with Williams and Sanders. Do you like that running back room now and working in tandem with what they're building up front on that line?
Well, so first of all, I don't really know what happened with Miles in Carolina, but he was a good player for the Eagles, right? I mean, he's not Saquon, but he was a good player for the Eagles. And, you know, he got a nice contract from Carolina, and maybe he wasn't as motivated. I don't know, but maybe this was a wake-up call for him, and he can get back to being what he was in Philly, because also Carolina didn't have a great offensive line. I like that they took not one but two running backs. The reality is, you know, you start to get to later rounds, usually it feels like you hit on 50% of those guys. So if you take two, you know, maybe Maffa ends up being awesome and Jadon Blue doesn't. I know this, Blue can run. He is, as you guys know, a blazer. And so I like getting that element in the Cowboys offense. And we'll see what Javonte Williams has. You know, that's very, very sad to me. Anytime a guy looks that good as a rookie, then has a major injury and doesn't look quite the same, maybe a year further removed, he'll be able to get back to that rookie year form. But they at least have a bunch of options there. And I think because of their experience with Rico Dowdle last year and the success he had, I think the Cowboys probably feel like with their offensive line, they can get inexpensive quality play from the running back position.
Ross, as a whole, though, when you look at the NFC East, and clearly Philadelphia has the best roster right now, but do you feel like that maybe the Giants and the Commanders and maybe the Cowboys have closed the gap a little bit, or is it still, it looked like to me Philadelphia had an outstanding draft, especially some of the guys that they were able to take even on day three?
Correct. They had a really good draft. They typically do. They are a very, very well-run organization. I do their preseason games, and even though they weren't one of the five teams I played for, they are impressive. I mean, in every way. I'm like, the marketing, like they are a well-run machine. And interestingly, by the way, they have the exact opposite philosophy of the Cowboys when it comes to contracts, which I think is fascinating. I'll just say this. If you're doing the opposite, the polar opposite of the Eagles from a contract standpoint, you might want to reevaluate the way you're going about it, because they have all of their best players, for the most part, under contract for years. That said, Brian, as you know, for them to lose Milton Williams and Sweat and Darius Slay and Gardner Johnson, I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot. So we'll see what their rookies are like, but the Eagles roster has taken a little bit of a step back, right? And it's hard to argue against that. The question is how much of a step back? And then the other question is how much of a step forward did the other teams take? Commanders are interesting the way they keep bringing in older guys. They are really trying to take advantage of Jaden Daniels on his rookie contract. I think they probably closed the distance a little bit. The Giants, I think, still have a long way to go. And I don't know how I feel about the Cowboys. I mean, I don't know that I feel like they're that much better than last year. You know, I think that they're hoping that a healthy Dak the whole year gets them back to double-digit wins. I don't know if that's going to happen for them, but they still have, you know, what I, the game I like to play, and this is actually a fun game for any NFC East team. It's called how many of your guys would start for the Eagles, right? And so you go through and you look at the Cowboys, and we don't need to do it right now, but you guys can go through and say how many of these, Micah would start, right? Mm-hmm. I think Dak would probably start over Hurts. We can debate that. But how many of the guys would really start for the best team in the division?
It's Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker here with you on 105.3 The Fan. I mean, I'm in my head right now trying to think, guys, is it just CeeDee Lamb?
Offensively?
Tyler Smith might at the guard spot.
Well, listen, Tyler Smith is awesome. I'm not convinced he's better than Landon Dickerson. And CeeDee Lamb is fantastic. I would just say A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith are pretty darn good.
Sure.
So I guess my point to you guys would be, I'll give them to you. I'll give you CeeDee Lamb and sure. I'll give you Tyler Smith, but you're still only talking two or three guys.
Right.
And even all of those positions, Dak versus Hurts, Landon Dickerson versus Tyler Smith, CeeDee Lamb versus Devontae and A.J. Brown, they're still close. Like, mm-hmm. even if you give the nod to the Cowboys, the Eagles dude is, like, real close.
Ross, so do you see, I mean, what the Eagles did in the second half of last year in the playoffs is one of the most impressive things I've seen in the salary cap era. Do you expect dominance in the conference to continue?
I would think that they'll be the favorite, right? But they did lose a bunch of major contributors. Now, you know, it's funny because they lost major contributors and those guys got a lot of money elsewhere, but Milton Williams didn't really even start for them until this year, and he's not Jalen Carter. I mean, think about this. The highest paid guy in Patriots franchise history, okay, was not even close to being the Eagles' best defensive tackle last year. That was Jalen Carter by a mile. So they still have good players. I would put them certainly as the favorite, but you guys know, hard to stay healthy after you make a long run like that. Right. Hard to do it again. You got to have a lot of things go your way. And I do think they have pretty good competition. You know, I think that the Lions will be right there again. I think the Packers are a team to watch. And the Rams almost beat them.
Yeah,
people forget, in the snow, the Rams almost beat them. Yeah. What would have happened if that game wasn't in the snow, right? I mean, maybe the Rams would have won. So while I think the Eagles are the favorites, I wouldn't say that they are the prohibitive favorites, right? I would think that there are teams that will be nipping on their heels.
Ross Tucker, I need the ultimate Mother's Day gift right about now. What you got for me?
Well, listen, my buddy started the company, the greatest Mother's Day gift ever. For those of you that are watching, I know how many people watch. I know YouTube's the big thing now for Odyssey. Check this thing out. We got this from my wife's grandma a couple years ago. By far the best Mother's Day gift ever. It's called MyFrontPageStory.com. You talk to a writer for 10 minutes while you're driving home from work, or maybe you fill out an email about your mom or your wife. They write this incredible story. It looks like it's, you know, on the cover of the Dallas Morning News, framed pictures of your mom and the kids or the grandkids or whatever. I'm just telling you, I've seen so many women cry after they get, like, happy tears, okay? Not like, you know, when RJ or Sean get something for their mom, right? Like, happy tears, okay? It's myfrontpagestory.com. Most of you, when's the last time you got your mom or your wife a gift that was so awesome it moved them to tears? This is it. I'd be almost shocked if she doesn't cry as she reads the quotes from you or your siblings or your kids. Myfrontpagestory.com. And if you go right now, they got 20% discount that pops up right when you go there. So do it, fellas. I would not steer you wrong. Myfrontpagestory.com.
Thanks, Ross. We'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, great seeing you, Brian. Great talking with you guys.
Thank you,
appreciate
man. Appreciate you, Ross.
Thanks, Ross buddy. Tucker here with you in the G-Bag Nation, the former NFL offensive lineman. Cowboy, I think that was it 2002? Larry Allen gets hurt. He stepped in there for the last six, 7 games for the Cowboys. And, you know, he's got a heck of a career now as a broadcaster, podcaster, media member there. Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker with you.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You've got me, Kevin Hagland. You have Corey Majors. And today, Alec is done with us. I don't know if he'll be back tomorrow, finally, Maybe if Ross does a really great job today, he will just take Alex's job.
You're always trying to pit people against each other like this.
Because competition brings the best out of us.
Yep, that's exactly why the Cowboys drafted some of the people that they drafted this year.
Oh, that is a professional transition. Ross, out of a scale of 1 to 10, how well do you think you're going to do today?
I'm going to guess, so 10 obviously being the best.
Mm-mm. Nope, 10's actually the worst.
Okay, the no. Well, then stop I'm going to go with a hard
stop
8.
This. All right, just real quick, because hard. Mike would always do this. He would always go, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest. If you live in the world, you know how the scale works.
I don't know. I think you have to explain just so people understand.
No, you know what? You can explain why you don't want to be that person's friend anymore. That's what you need to explain in that instance.
From the 817, saw Alec all over SmackDown. So there, he's really jealous that he was on Smashdown.
So I have a theory. Okay. I have a theory. Alec's going to be like, oh, yeah, like dentist appointment or whatever today. But realistically, I think he's partied out from the weekend.
Touchdown Jesus says he thought he was going to get drafted. So that's why he.
Oh, man.
He didn't make it in today.
Ooh, as what? I guess.
Dude.
What?
Wow.
He doesn't have any.
He could be a running back.
Yeah, he could for the Cowboys. He went to SmackDown. He went to the Travis Scott concert. I think he is just fatigued from too much partying.
I get it. I've been fatigued before.
Okay. Thank you for that, Corey.
You need a day off every once in a while, man.
All right. Go ahead and hit me with cut number 8, if you will, Ross, because Corey, he just kind of talked about it. I wanted to get people's feel for the Cowboys put need versus best player available to the test. Like, you literally saw it happen on Friday. What do we think of this strategy?
With the 44th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the Dallas Cowboys select Donovan Ezeraku, defensive end, Boston College.
Now, and have we decided for sure it's Ezeraku? With that pick and the third round pick, the Cowboys, I mean, we talked about it like all day on Friday. Mm-hmm. People were like, I need a running back. I need a wide receiver. I need a running back. I need a wide receiver. Like, that's what needs to happen. And the Cowboys, they didn't do that whatsoever. But instead, they picked two players that I'm not saying like both were first round evaluations, but you could view them as easy second rounders and fringy first round people.
I think Broadus had E at 25.
Okay.
On his stack. And then I think he had Ravel at 18.
See.
Or 17, somewhere like really high up there.
And Kuiper had him at 28 and 31. So to my point,
there,
like, fringy first round. And so I saw kind of an.
Probably not first round grades, considering exactly. We heard there were like 15.
But like,
yeah.
You got to pick somebody.
Yep. Yep.
But, and so I saw kind of a split decision between, like, on listening to our coverage right here on The Fan, which, again, what did I tell you? Friday, even more impressive. Saturday, you're embarrassed for other stations.
Mm-hmm.
You are.
Yep.
And they're like, hey, love the value, yep. Love the value, love the value. And then you see on social media or some of our platforms, people are like, oh, now you don't have a wide receiver or running back. Like, how do you guys feel about the need versus best player available? Because it really does feel like in this instance, having not seen their board yet, they went best player available.
Yes. And you say this too, why do you make your board? Why'd you spend all this time working on this board if you're seeing players there and you're not taking them?
Oh, I'm sorry. It was Kendrick Lamar, not Travis Scott. My bad. So I have WrestleMania on the brain still.
So whenever you have those players there, I mean, it's. I think you kind of just, I got to take that guy. That's something that I wanted. You know, it's something that we designed that we said can be a helpful player, and nobody's taking this guy. We know what he's capable of. So I like the fact that they went best player available. I can't walk away from their draft saying that I don't feel pretty good about it. Now the need part of it, they needed a running back.
Yep.
They got two running backs. They have 9 running backs, essentially. And they're going to throw all of them into the mix and say, let's see how this works.
Yeah. It's like the Cleveland Browns quarterback room.
Yeah. And it will almost every year, Kevin, it seems like the Cowboys get defiant about one position that everybody feels they need. And they're like, screw you. Yeah. We aren't doing what you think we're going to do. We're taking all these other things.
Do you think they prepared us for that on Tuesday with the pre-draft presser? And Jerry's like, hey, we didn't think running back was as much of an issue as other people seemed to.
He thought offensive line was the bigger problem, and I think we all agreed with that, too, at the time. We were like, look, if you have a good offensive line and a good running back, you have a good running game. I do kind of find a little intrigue in the idea that they might shorten and squeeze this field a little bit for Dak coming back off the injury. Maybe a little more of the some stuff out of the backfield and tight end stuff, and you know, getting the ball to CeeDee Lamb as frequently as possible to shorten that field. But that's a different. That's for later on after we watch how this all fits together. I liked what they did though, Kevin.
Yeah,
especially with those top three picks. You talked about how important these top three picks were for them, and let's look at this down the road. Diggs, do you think he's here for the rest of his contract?
No.
I
don't know what he's going to do this year.
We heard some things about the prep for his injury, his rehabilitation, and how maybe he could have worked a little bit harder.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money that he was given, and then he got injured again, and now you're like, oh, man, this is a lot of games you're missing. I got to be prepared for something like that. I got to make sure that I have a body that can be out there to play if you're not going to be capable of playing. So I got to make sure I do that. So they get a guy who Kevin... He kind of has this Jordan Lewis. Listen, he has a lot of really great skills that I like. I mean, you can say he's very well-rounded cornerback. But I think the one that I like the most about him when I watch him is Jordan Lewis never did what? He never made business decisions.
Yeah,
Jordan Lewis was put his nose in there and hit somebody, and that's what I like about Siavon Revel Jr. I like that about him. So... And then if you're saying Bland wants his payday one day and you're moving on from Diggs, you have somebody that you're like, you will feel comfortable probably in a year or two to say he's that dude. He's that dude on the other side.
And, you know, we talked about it leading into the draft. Like, how many positions on the Cowboys are you like, we're great, we're rolling.
So let me ask you this on the cornerback front. That kind of is a position of need now.
I'm not going to argue that at
BPA.
All.
So that was kind of a combination. Now on the edge with Donovan, I'm kind of curious on that because you got Sam Williams, you got Fowler, you got Micah, you got him. Neyland is growing into the position, but he's more of a, you know, right now you're thinking first two downs on him. Where does he fit in? Is he a need at all?
See, and I don't think so, and we'll get back to cornerback in just a second, but I wonder if they look at this and they were like, he can be the second best one we have. Now, that doesn't mean behind only Micah. That doesn't mean straight away, but if you're like, hey, you only have Fowler for a year, Sam Williams, I would love that, but he has been hurt, and he was hurt last year. Marshawn Neyland, look, you hope it continues to move in the right direction, but you can never be sure. I wonder if they looked at that on the board in the second round, and they're like, he could be the second best one we have behind Micah.
Okay, this isn't like we're replacing Micah with him in your mind.
Look, I've said this many times. I would be stunned if the Cowboys were like, yeah, you know what? We are going to trade Micah Parsons. Stunned if that happens.
Because their history doesn't set for that?
Exactly. Okay, all right. Exactly. And so if that happens, well, then we'll have a totally different conversation. But I just wonder if they were sitting there and they're like, hey, this is a premium position. Cornerback is obviously really become, in terms of especially the money, a very premium position. If they're like, we think these could be the second best ones on our team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you think that your third round pick can sooner rather than later be CB2 or at least CB3, then, hey, make a move.
Sounds like a good band in the 90s.
Yes. Or if you think your second round pick, you're like, hey, maybe not this year, but within the next 2 years, he's going to be our second off the edge. Then that makes a lot of sense, because when we talk going into the draft about the positions where you're just like, we're perfect, there's not really that many. Yeah. And we kind of argued if there are any on the Cowboys. Like, I can't look at this and go, I know they're good at edge and cornerback, but I can't believe they drafted that person. Like, I know those players were good. I can't believe. Look, I'll take more cornerbacks, more edges. Now, it did come at the expense of wide receiver 2 and running back 1.
Do you feel like they're going to try and replace wide receiver 2?
Yes.
With something else?
Yes.
Or do you think they're going to do it via the old, hey, Ryan Flournoy, he's a dude. He's a guy.
Look.
Hey, guys, don't forget about Cropper.
I also heard those rantings during the press conference, and that's great. If you tell me that in 2029, Ryan Flournoy has moved up to wide receiver number two. Rock on. Can't wait to see the journey. But now, what are we even talking about?
That's the thing that I find most intriguing, Kevin, is at what point?
Yeah.
Like, if the Cowboys are going to wait until training camp and go, all right, guys, we're seeing these guys haven't turned into this.
Yes.
At what point does that trade? Now, did you screw yourself by holding on a little too long? Or did you find a diamond in the rough and you're like, no, we actually have one here?
So I think they are going to make the move for wide receiver. And I don't know if you like this wide receiver or not, but the word going around was George Pickens. Now, it's not specifically laid out by Todd Archer, but a potential disgruntled wide receiver was being discussed for the Cowboys. So when we talk about those like substantive trades, I think George Pickens is one of those people.
Mm.
And because that's one of the things, I go back to Friday with Steven. I thought this was really interesting. He said those two substantive deals that they're working on can happen after the draft.
Yep.
So they were not dependent on
those picks.
Yeah, you got to deal your pick off for whatever. Now, I don't know if that will be a player or if that will be next year then, but I think one of those targets is George Pickens.
So you're not as upset about ignoring it in the draft because maybe, and here's the thing about Pickens, and you're going to see this everywhere. Regarding culture,
fair.
That dude is a diva as he gets,
got it.
And has not produced
what I expected
a lot sure. more out of him, and I'm constantly like pushing that guy because I know he can make some wild ass catches.
Yeah,
but I'm like, hey, the typical stuff, the easy stuff, get it done. And I'm kind of interested in the personality and if Shoddy's like, hey, I need culture guys. Is he like, oh, I got the culture I need.
Yeah.
I got the core, and we can handle, our infrastructure can handle a guy like that as long as the play is good. I don't know. We'll see how that goes, but. That ultimately you're not as upset about them passing on receiver then?
I'm more upset about them passing on running back
okay.
until later, but I want to make this clear. I support what they did. This was the agitating thing, and I know there's nothing you can do to go back to it, but when you saw that literally pick 114 that the Cowboys dealt off for Mingo was a running back that got selected, you're just kind of like, oh! Like, that's what I needed.
You sleep in the bed that you make.
I know, and there's nothing you can do to change that now. But I think there's a better chance that they trade for a wide receiver that we're like, yeah, okay. Then you trade for a running back that you're like, that's RB1.
So you hate Jaden Blue?
No.
What I'm hearing
I
here.
I think, don't you think though, Jaden Blue, he's a change of pace back, right?
It's actually interesting because he can do things. Turpin can do some of the similar things too, catching the ball out of the backfield.
Yeah.
And what is it when you watch Turpin? What was his yards per carry, like 9?
I would have to go back and check that.
It was something insane. I think that Jaden Blue can fill those types of roles. He's a very good receiver, like a very yes. good receiver out of the backfield. The biggest factor that every Texas fan is going to send in right now is, don't put the ball on the ground.
Yeah.
And that is something that he had yeah. a tendency to do. So I totally get that part of it. But he is a good receiver. He's fast. And I think that, Kevin, this team lacks speed in so many different ways that they need more of it. So I like the pick. I would have liked some other running backs ahead of him for sure. But I seeing what they got in the first three, and I know where the fourth round pick was, I feel pretty good with the running back.
And I think that's why when all comes down to it, just in terms of value right now, I like what they did. If they would have made picks in the second or third round that people were like, yeah, that was a fringy second round guy or fringy third round guy, I'd have been like, ugh, just take a position of need.
They stuck with it.
Yeah, instead, they got two players that everyone's like, yeah, I'm kind of surprised those players are on the board at this point.
The fan text is absolutely killing us right now. Is it true that Mingo's been looking better than Tolbert in practice? Guys, we got Mingo. We are loaded. And then you guys are totally sleeping on Mingo the Merciless.
I think they're being sarcastic.
I hope the best for Jonathan Mingo opposite CeeDee Lamb. I absolutely do. And I hope that Dak can get the ball to him. And I hope that this offense under Brian Schottenheimer and his new group is as creative as they need to be in order to make this offense go.
Did you know the Dallas Cowboys rookie minicamp starts on Friday?
This Friday?
This Friday.
Dude. I think
they'll have to wait to watch Thunderbolts.
I think Thursday I'm gonna be out at the stadium for baseball game, Kevin.
Me too.
If you want to go.
Yeah, let's do it. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, these are kind of intertwined. Did you ever pull off a prank that you regretted? But also, did Shador and Ewers get snubbed, or did the talent evaluators potentially just get it right? Next on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Post-draft, what Cowboys position groups do you feel good about? And I'm probably not going to say the word again, but instead, I'm going to turn it over to the Buffalo Bills GM, Brandon Bean, because he uses this word a shocking amount of time in a short period of time. So Brandon Bean called into, well, one of our sister stations to talk about the draft, and he felt like in the minute or two leading up to it, he was not pleased with their lack of faith and lack of excitement over the draft, and use one specific word many times. Let's see if you can figure it out.
I was just listening to the last few minutes of your show before I came on, waiting on here.
All right.
Sounds like 2018 all over with you guys.
Well, we're very, how so?
Well, you guys were bitching in 2018 about Josh Allen. You guys wanted Josh Rosen, and now you guys are bitching that we don't have a receiver. I don't get it. Like, we just scored. Hold on, let me talk. Scored 30 points in a row for 8 straight games. A year ago, I get you guys asking why we didn't have receivers, but I don't understand it now. You just saw us lead the league in points when you add all the postseason. No one scored more points than the Buffalo Bills, including the Super Bowl champions. So you just saw us do it without Stephon Diggs, same group. How is this group not better than last year's group? Like, I don't – like, our job is to score points and win games. Where do we need to get better? Defense. We did that. So I get it. You got to have a show, and you got to have something to bitch about. But bitching about wide receiver is one of the dumbest arguments I've heard.
4 times. So –
you think whenever he's at the offices at Buffalo that he cusses less, or do you think that he uses that frequently?
No, that feels like his go-to phrase for sure. And so I just wanted to play that because I think it's fun. But also, post-draft, which Cowboys positions do you feel good about, and which ones lead you down the path of the Bills GM?
I guess wide receiver leads me down that path, which is funny.
I don't know if I need to play that clip again for you, all right? Relax.
And as we discussed earlier, the Cowboys, they feel comfortable, but Kevin, not comfortable enough to not have the discussion with other teams about trading for a wide receiver.
Yeah.
So obviously there is conversation going on about what they can do to make the team better. And if you're looking at this thing right now, Kevin, and saying that you kind of hit the reset button on the backup offensive linemen. They have 17 offensive linemen signed to this team right now on their roster.
Is that right?
17 offensive linemen.
Awesome.
It's ridiculous. But if you kind of look at, all right, we're replacing this guy, then this team is kind of resetting itself
okay.
a little bit. I mean, think of it that way where they moved on from some things. They have a new head coach. He obviously has to build something pretty quickly. And with his wide receiver, he's probably looking at it going, I know what I got with CeeDee, but I don't trust anything else yet. Guys, y'all, I need a little bit of help here. And the Cowboys, in a year where they want to prop up their head coach,
right,
not demolish him, are like, whatever you need, we can try and give it to you. And give him the credit. Give Schottenheimer the credit for being right there in the mix of it all. Not going and hanging out somewhere else while everybody's doing the scouting work. Schottenheimer's right there trying to get it all done. So I do feel I feel better about the offensive line than I have. So after they added him, after they added Booker on this at the right guard spot, I feel like the middle of this offensive line is very strong. I still have concern about the tackles, but I feel like the middle of the offensive line and the 85 backups that they have are good. So that's the strongest position I actually feel about right now.
And see, for me, it depends. If you're alive, if you feel okay breaking up the defensive line as a whole, then I feel pretty stoked about our edge position right now.
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
And so that's what I would go with. And if you're like, nah, you got to take the whole package. Well, look, I understand there's still some potential flaws there, but I feel a lot better about the defensive line specifically the edge position after this. Like
Your rotation there is going to be very strong.
Oh, my God.
Your rotation at defensive end is going to be very strong. And hopefully Sam Williams doesn't. I can't explain or predict what he's going to be.
Yeah.
I know physically the traits are insane.
Yeah.
Like he's a giant physically. He's faster than he should be. And he can get to the ball carrier or ball thrower, whoever it is, very fast. But it's the other things that that are a big question mark of. We just got a 7-yard loss on that play and then also a 15-yard penalty.
So for me, what I'm going to go Bills GM on right here is it's still the running back. And the reason why I differentiate my frustration with running back from wide receiver, because as we all know, like they're two very clear holes. You don't have a running back one and you don't have a wide receiver two. Look, the Jones family can come on here and say they disagree with that all they like. That's fine. My opinion, and the correct opinion, is that they do not have a running back one or a wide receiver two. The thing that bothers me more is I see more options for wide receiver two out there. Now, I know like whether it's Amari Cooper, Keenan Allen, that's already driving some people crazy, but I really don't want ETN to like come in here and I'm like, great. So you have another one that I'm like,
his combination of all the other guys. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that's what was frustrating for me for running back. And I know they did take Blue and I know he is a speedster. He's not running back one.
It doesn't matter how much you like Blue
or
how much you like Maffa. Okay. Those guys were picked on day three for a reason.
Yeah.
And as what we want him to be, like we want Jaden Blue to be like, everybody has this idea of if he can hold on to the ball. That speed, and I agree, the speed can be a game changer. He might be able to be a game changer out of the backfield as a receiver, too. That is a distinct possibility for him. But the complete backs go in the top of the first round. The complete backs go earlier than day three.
Yes.
And so that's what you're dealing with. You have to understand and accept that there are some things missing from his skill set. The rest of your running backs are also missing things from their skill set. That's why they were free agents.
Yeah.
Or that's why they just haven't caught on yet, because they aren't complete yet. And so you have a bunch of incomplete pieces that you have to try and figure out how to get on the field at the right times.
From the 469, isn't it Dak's responsibility to make Mingo and Tolbert the number two and three receivers? He's getting all the money. Romo made receivers. All right. Let's take a couple of steps back. If you want to compare to Romo, we can definitely do that, because I actually did think that there were multiple receivers that Tony Romo made better. It's just, I understand their point, but this feels like Cowboys logic that I really don't like. You overpaid Dak. That's a fact. Like, that cannot possibly be disputed after what Josh Allen did. Like, that's just a cold, hard fact. And so you can't use the fact that you overpaid and say, now I want you to magically develop even more skills than you've displayed. I think Dak can raise the level of certain wide receivers for certain amounts of time. For him to say, I'm going to raise up Mingo and Tolbert another level, or maybe even two position levels from where they should be, I just do not think that's reasonable for him, especially coming off of an injury. So you spent the money, you spent it incorrectly, and now you have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think saying, well, Dak should be able to do that if he's getting paid all the money, should, but he won't.
Yeah.
Not for a season. It's not going to happen.
It is always weird. And it has been a Cowboys history, hasn't it? To be like, once we pay them.
Yeah.
Or once they put that star in their helmet, they'll be different.
Yeah. And guess what?
Somebody said from the 214, if we get Bryce Hall, I would love Bryce Hall. I would love to have
Breece
that.
Hall?
Breece Hall. Yeah, I'm sorry. They said Bryce. I would love Breece Hall. That kind of talent in the backfield would be an absolute blast to run with.
And does it feel like you would give him a real shot, or you would feel more comfortable him as running back?
He would be your one, yes.
Okay.
Immediately.
And I understand the...
And then you're trying to figure out, because Miles Sanders and Javonte Williams are two completely different running backs. And I don't know where Deuce Vaughn fits into this, or Malik Davis. I don't know where they fit into it, but they haven't been good enough yet to be the starter for this team who was missing a running back. So that's where I'm still kind of lost in that conversation. Sorry to take that away from
the Dak part. No, not at all.
Yes, there are plenty of good ones on days two and three. the great ones typically go in the first round. Like that's, and the ones that are going to walk onto the field and be starters almost immediately go in the first round. That's the point. The guys that are on days two and three, a lot of times, mostly on days three, have to work harder to get seen by the team.
Alec, is there a particular position that you feel pretty confident about with the Cowboys position group wise post draft, or is there one that you would like to make the Bills GM phone call and that's how you feel?
I feel like one that's not getting talked about enough as a positive is what you did with the corner position and getting Revel.
I agree with that.
I think he's fantastic. If it wasn't for a pretty big knee injury, then he would have been a, you know, mid to top of the first round kind of guy. He's incredible. The way he trails receivers, the plays he can make on the football, he's really, really good. You found yourself a starter there at corner if he can stay healthy. That's going to be really fun to watch. The defensive line, I think, got better throughout the draft as well. But I will, it's the low-hanging fruit. I'm going to keep pointing at the running back position because, like you said, there's not a clear running back one. And I like that Jaden Blue, even in his first availability, admitted, like, hey, if I got to come in and be a running back by committee guy, I understand that. If I come in and win the job out of camp, cool. Either way, we're going to try to win some football games with whatever combination we need. You're probably going to need a pretty, you know, ever-changing combination of running backs throughout the season, of whether it's just health or production overall, like you're kind of even seeing with the Rangers lineup. You can point to that similar thing. You're gonna have to make some changes throughout this season depending on who's hot and who's not at the running back position, because there isn't a clear-cut guy now. Like Corey said, Breece Hall could change all of that. He would be your clear-cut running back one day one if that trade were to be made. That's not a free agent. You got to make some things move and some things shake for that to happen. Right now, I do think Blue can develop into something, but right now, you don't have a clear leader in that running back room, which is disappointing considering how deep this class really was.
Now, are you okay if I pivot over to something else? All right.
Oh, pivotal game five last night for the Stars, Kevin.
Yes.
Pivotal!
That is... I don't know if everyone knows that. We joke about that all the time, is how many times you hear that word and then how many times you'll be like, oh, pivotal game two. And you're like, okay, then they're all pivotal.
Game one's a must win.
Yeah, okay, then they're all pivotal. It's the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Like, I had an amazing conversation with my wife. We were talking about...
Good for you, man. Not everybody gets to do that.
We were talking about one of the basketball series, and I was like, you know, I'm not like super invested in Bucks Pacers. And she goes, oh, is this an important game? And then she stopped and goes, well, it's a playoff, so I guess they're probably all important. And I was like, yes, exactly. I had a couple more baseball notes for you. Did you see the next stadium that the Savannah Bananas took over?
No, I didn't.
It took over Clemson's football stadium and had a crowd of 81,000 people there for that.
Wow, dude, I'm telling you, man. I don't know that you say, let's load up 162 and those guys would fill up every single time.
Sure,
but very similar to the Globetrotters, it's an entertaining sight when you get there.
And I can't wait to see how the rest of the year plays out. But this year, they're scheduled to play in 40 cities, including multiple NFL stadiums and 17 Major League Baseball stadiums. And then there's this. Here's our happy Ranger stat of the day, since, you know, I don't really have a lot of those to present to you. Jacob Lats. So last week, Jacob Lats generated a 0.3 war in his season debut against the A's. Just for that, 4 1/3 scoreless innings out of the bullpen in relief of Rocker. That is tremendous, right?
Yes.
Now, to be fair, I need to tell you the flip side of it. At the time, his war of 0.3 from that one game right there was better than all but five position players on the Texas Rangers roster. Right now, dude.
This seems so weird that you're bringing this. This hurts my soul.
I know, but
here I am thinking our pitching is going to save us.
Hey, look, you've got DeGrom and Eovaldi, and we were talking about this off air. Man, we really need them to come through. Okay. And then what? You're going to win for sure?
Hopefully.
But unless it's a complete game shutout, you're like, either way. Like if I set the over under.
How many times do you think the Rangers have only scored one run?
A lot. Like, just look back at the last, what, several, the last week or so, right?
They've scored no runs a lot, too.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so I set the over-under. I'm not kidding. I set the over on Rangers runs tonight, scored at 2.5.
That seems like an easy play. It seems like an easy play.
What is your answer?
Under.
See?
Like I feel like two. I mean, even Boach. That's depressing. Isn't that Boach's line? He was like, I got to get off this two number here.
Yes.
We got to stop doing this.
We're the KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You know what? Again, I hope they score 10 runs. Boach loves the numbers. We can bring that to him. It's like, I'm sorry. Yesterday, I set the over-under at 2.5. I think he would chuckle, but only if they scored a lot of runs and won the game.
He does like looking at the lines.
Yes, he does.